I'm joined by Dr. Ruth Thompson Miller. Thank you so much for coming in. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Can you tell me a little bit of the background of what got you into this research and explain really what is segregation stress syndrome?
For my dissertation, I went into the African-American community, and I interviewed folks about their experiences during Jim Crow, you know, their everyday, day-to-day experience. And one day, I went to interview a woman, and we started talking about her experience, and she started shaking and sweating and crying, and I realized this woman is suffering from post-traumatic stress syndrome. And I got to tell you this real quick, too.
Mm-hmm.
I went to South Africa for a month, and I did some interview with Black South Africans over there. And I saw the same thing, that same syndrome of not being past something. Because, you know, with PTSD, there is no cure. There's only treatment. However, the thing that's different about segregation stress syndrome is that I'm focusing on a collective group of people that lived in a particular geographical location at the same time, experiencing the same racial traumatic events, witnessing lynchings, being raped, hearing about people getting hurt for no reason at all. And the thing that is also different from PTSD with segregation stress syndrome is that PTSD is post-trauma. With segregation stress syndrome, the trauma has not yet ended. African Americans are still experiencing this constant trauma of, you know, the fear of being shot, the anxiety that goes along with keeping yourself safe and your family safe. So I think those are two really key components.
I mean, they're getting older now, the people who lived through Jim Crow. Would you say most people who lived through that era, they feel this stress, this sort of latent PTSD?
There's different degrees of having the syndrome. And I want to be clear that in as much as a person is or may be suffering from the syndrome, there's still a sense of resilience, a sense of wanting to fight. But when you have folks that have seen bodies hanging from trees, right, and then you're still alive and you look on TV and you see a young man that has been shot to death laying in the street for 4 hours, that's a trigger.
So that might explain in some ways the response that we've seen really since Ferguson. There's a collective stress that, I don't know, that when you see something happening today, they remember that the people who maybe their grandparents, their parents lived through this sort of stuff and they were never able to process it. And then here it's still happening. Can you explain how your work with segregation stress syndrome is now applicable to what's happening today?
Young folks are socialized, taught to say yes, so, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. And so the elderly, in an attempt to keep their children safe, have passed on the lessons that they learned from their family members. However, I think that it's not just the killings. It's this constant denial of people's narrative.
What can we do about it now? I suppose just it's good to be aware of it, this aspect of our collective history. But what more do you think can be done? Is it something that, I don't know, where do you see it going?
I think as a country, we need to tell the truth of what happened. We really do. You're absolutely right. The folks that survived this, they're dying off. Some of the folks that I interviewed are already gone. So the record is dying with them. So it must be preserved, and the truth has got to be told.
Dr. Ruth Thompson Miller, thank you so much. Really appreciate your conversation.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me here today. I appreciate it.